My name is Bill Lennon, and the title of this session is The Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. Well, this should be fun, and either you've done it before and you'll take another look at it. One of the things is you'll probably hear some different things about how I talk about them. Come on in. About how I talk about the Myers-Briggs. And folks, these folks were able to come early and took a test. No, that wouldn't work. But come on in and let's talk about the thing. And if you want to take it, I'll give it to you later and you can sort of get the idea and I'll let you take the test later. Happy to do that. I'm a psychologist and I actually have a practice in Bellevue outside of Seattle. And I use the Myers-Briggs a lot, probably used it for 15 years, I suppose. And I want to talk a little bit about the test, and then I want to start talking to you about your scores and what they mean and what they don't mean, and give you some of my ideas. It's almost like everybody that does this thing. I go to workshops and other people teach it, and some of them teach it differently. So my guess would be you'll hear some things. Even those of you that have done this before will hear some things differently. And I don't know whether that'll mean that I do it right and they do it wrong, or they do it right and I do it wrong, but some of it will be different. Myers and Briggs are two folks, and they're interesting folks. And most of the Myers-Briggs research has been done at the University of Florida. Tons of Myers-Briggs research done at the University of Florida. I'll contrast that with tomorrow we're going to talk about another type test where we'll do, and I've got another test to give you, the Enneagram, and it has been researched very little, although it was passed down with an oral tradition for several thousand years. So I'm not saying one's better than the other, but it's an interesting test and way to look at types. The Myers-Briggs really grew out of some work that Carl Jung did, if you don't know that. I'll tell you that. And Jung did just lots and lots of work on personality constellations, trying to figure out, and some of you, you know, you took an intro to psych class and you learned about archetypes and some of those kinds of things. And you know, that it can wind up really helping you, and sometimes it gets in the way. One of the things I want to make very, very clear is that you cannot ask somebody 94 questions or 500 questions or any number of questions and really know what their personality is. There are some things we can know, but nobody fits a box like that. We just don't fit boxes. On the other hand, you can get some better ideas. There are some things that we can get from testing. And as far as I'm concerned, the best way to use the Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram or any of the other tests that I listed up here, but particularly the Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram, is to pay attention to what it says to you about you. Where you get in trouble is when, and it's so much fun to do, is when you start figuring out other people by your interpretation of how they do on this. And that gets you in a little bit of trouble because you don't really know as much about them, and they may not be even interested in you telling them that they're an introvert or an intuitive. You know, they haven't hired you to do that. And I usually use the term hired you to do it all the time. As a therapist, I don't know if I ever would. I certainly never want to do any kind of figuring out of or analyzing or whatever with anybody unless they hire me to do it. Now, hire me may have financial exchange, or it may be one of my kids coming to me and saying, Dad, what about this? Can we talk about it? That's hiring somebody to do it. That's asking. So you have a little contract. But I really encourage you to use instruments like this to figure yourself out. Be a little careful about trying to figure other people out, unless you just sort of do it in your own head. You're never wrong on the MBTI. One of the things that I think is really neat about this test is There are 16 different points that you can come up with on the Myers-Briggs. Actually more than that. But you will come up with four letters, and it will say some things about you. And there have been thousands and thousands of computer hours saying that when you have this constellation of four letters, you have some personality that leans this way. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. It's not perfect, but it can sort of help you a little bit. So you wind up being an ISTJ or an ENFP or something, because you get, on your forced choice, you had to pick an answer. And every question was either at this end of the continuum or at this end of the continuum. Now, I've heard several people up here say, well, at such and such a place where we did it, and such, in fact, somebody told me in the hot tub last night that on theirs, the way they were taught, and I don't teach it this way, but I'm just giving room for somebody else, that they had what I call mid-range scores, so they work both sides. Well, I don't teach it that way. It's not the way I've learned it. It's not the way I believe it. I look at the Myers-Briggs as sort of like being pregnant. You know, there is a point where you are, and there is a point where you're not. Now, you can be 2 days pregnant. I'm going to be a grandpa in 2 weeks. And Gina right now is very pregnant. And there's a lot of difference between being very pregnant and being a little pregnant, but there's also some difference between being a little pregnant and being not pregnant at all. And if you lean toward even a small number of points, the way I understand the Myers-Briggs, then for now, that's what you are. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So all of the questions, every question that was asked of you on the test was asked along a continuum of introvert to extrovert, or sensate to intuitive, or thinker to feeler, or judger to perceiver. Does that make sense so far? One way or the other. Well, you can immediately say to me, but you made me go to one way, and, well, yeah, I did. But at least all the questions are asked a number of times. Now, that is an abbreviated version of the Myers-Briggs. The regular Myers-Briggs is a longer one, and some of you that have taken the test know that, but this will give you an idea. One of the things about the Myers-Briggs is that you have Myers-Briggs type, which is what you have in front of you. You're an ISTJ or an ENFP or whatever you are. Can you see those numbers down there? You got four letters, and those were your highest scores because you answered more one way than the other way. A lot of you see that. You see four letters, and that's you. Now, of course, you can't be an IENT. I mean, that doesn't work that way. You're one of these. Does that all make sense? I want to compare that to a lot of other tests. Now, I use these other tests a lot. And you may or may not know them, and it doesn't matter, but I want to talk for 60 seconds about them. The MMPI, the MCMI, the 16PF, I'm using three examples. Those are all personality tests that psychologists use a lot. They're much longer than the Myers-Briggs. The MMPI is the granddaddy. It's got 566 questions, and it's been normed against literally thousands and thousands of subjects, as has the Myers-Briggs. One of the huge differences in the MMP, these are all three of these are psychological tests, personality tests. One of the differences is, in all of these tests, what you do is find a pathological response in all of these. Not the Myers-Briggs, where you're paranoid or you're depressed or you've got some pathological response, and they've identified it from, say, a hospital population that this person we know is clinically depressed. And on clinical depression, we know that they answer enough of the questions this way that if you take the MMPI and you get enough of the questions that way, you're probably clinically depressed, or you're probably paranoid, or you're probably psychopathic, but it's all negative. Zero negative on the Myers-Briggs. You can't flunk it, and there's no set of four letters that's bad. If you come up with four letters that you look at, and you look at two friends, and you say, well, I think I'd like to be that. Number one, I'm communicating incorrectly because there isn't another one that's better than the one you got. This is totally positively oriented. Or it may not be your true score. I said there's a Myers-Briggs type and a true type. Now, one of the things is you just took an abbreviated version. So we lose some percentage of how well we know we've got you typed. Another thing is, sometimes people operate because they've learned to function so well in one manner, one way, and it's not really the way they are inside, but they've done that so well for so long because in their family, a woman that I can think of, because we had lots of fun with her, she took the Myers-Briggs three different times, and in her family, with three brothers, all of whom were engineers, you got valued for one thing, and she got valued for the same kind of brain power, left brain, linear, and she really wasn't that way at all. And as she was doing some counseling and began to make some shifts, she started shifting on the Myers-Briggs. And then we got to who and what she really was. So I walked out, in a few minutes we'll do this, but I walked out of the office with not all of these. And these are little descriptors when you come up with your numbers, and I'll get you in little groups and have you talk about them and read through this as a group, as many as I have, and I'll try to talk with the rest of you about what it looks like to be that kind of person. But it ought to fit like a glove. So if I put you in the corner with some ENFPs, it ought to feel very comfortable to be talking with other ENFPs. You know, you just, of course, you'll be talking a lot, but because extroverts do talk a lot. And the poor introverts think, why can't they ever shut up? But, or vice versa. But it, and I don't, we don't have time to do in a 1 hour session, but if it interests you and intrigues you, one of the books is a fun thing and is helpful is Please Understand Me, Kiersey Bates' book. Just explains a lot of this very well. And when you come up with your type and you do more reading than we're going to do today, it ought to fit just like a glove. You ought to say, I can't believe I can take that little test. And it's perfect. And if it's not, kind of go look at it again. Maybe take, or get two friends that you think know you pretty well and run through some of those questions with them. And they say, that's not you. And come up to what is true type versus MBTI type, which sometimes you're answering either because, well, I'm not really that way, but I'd like to be that way, you know, so I shade it over that way, or whatever. There's nothing that comes out of it that's wrong. When we talk about type, what we're trying to do is come up with some personality constellations. Freud did the original stuff that Jung actually did, I think, much better work than Freud did. You know, he came up with the ego and the id and the superego. Not talking about types of people, but just figuring out how people worked out. And then Tom Harris wrote, when he wrote the book in the 60s, I'm Okay, You're Okay, he tried to do some stuff where he said, inside us, we've all got this parent-adult-child piece, and that's all accurate, and we do. And Jung did a lot of the type work around the Myers-Briggs, or started it. Now, Myers and Briggs actually did all this work. Jung didn't do the Myers-Briggs test, but it's a Jungian instrument. What those folks did was they added the judger and the perceiver. Pretty straight Jungian stuff, these three. And then the Myers-Briggs folks added the fourth one. And the thing that has been the most helpful is running those major computers and just running it through and through and through and through and through and coming up with, for instance, vocations. Nurses, for instance, the number of nurses that are, and don't ask me why, because it could be I or E, but it's enormous when you run it through the computer, the number of nurses that are introverted, intuitive, feeling judgers. That's nurses. that INFJ are nurses. Now, surgeons, and that's not to say that somebody can't be the same way, but surgeons and CPAs and engineers that work at Boeing, you know, folks like that, that are left brain and linear and finite and detailed and absolutely wonderful in the way they do those things, often are introverted, sensate, thinking judges. I mean, over and over and over and over again. So let me tell you a little bit about those, and then I want you to score your own. Or if you want to say something right now, you can sure do that. But I want to talk to you a little bit about what some of these parts are. The words are a little different than we use socially. Somewhat the same, but not dramatically the same. What we mean by an introvert and an extrovert here is not somebody that's goofy and funny necessarily and has a good time and is highly verbal, although there's probably some truth in that too. But the key thing on the introvert-extrovert difference with the Myers-Briggs is that introverts think to talk, and extroverts talk to think. Introverts think to talk. So if you ask an introvert, a true introvert in the sense of, you know, you scored on this, wow, oh, something big is happening out there. It's a great big tractor. So in theory, if you answered questions on the forced choice test more on the I side, what that means is that you go inside to figure things out and then come out with an answer. If you scored more on this side, you talk it out, you read social cues, and you may change your position four times in a paragraph to get down to what you want to come up with. And the farther out you are on the score, the more you do that process. Is that making some sense to you? If I ask an either an introvert or an extrovert a very simple question, they can probably handle it either way. But if I ask you something, that's part of my gang. They're just trying to see, what are we doing in here? Bill, what are you up to? If I ask you something that's pretty meaningful, pretty significant, and you have to really work at, the more intense, important, powerful it is, the more an extrovert has to talk it out, and the more an introvert has to get quiet. So if I ask you about whether you like that sauce today for lunch, you can both probably answer pretty quickly and simply. But if I ask you about, but on this eternal security thing and salvation, you know, where are you really? Well, you know, if that's an important thing to you, extroverts have to kind of get around some people. And you watch extroverts in movies. There's, you know, there's movie-going behavior. Extroverts can only stay quiet for a while and then, hey, wasn't that neat? And what'd you think of that? And the introverts think, don't you ever shut up. Because the introverts are working inside and coming up with whatever it is they come up with. The introverts are. The extroverts are trying to ground themselves, figure out what they think and how they feel. And they do that externally. Introverts do that internally. It's not better or worse, it's just different. Now, let's come up with a counseling kind of thing for couples. It's interesting. When you have one member of a couple relationship, or a family relationship, or an employment relationship, somebody you've got to be working with quite a bit, what's key is the difference in your score. See, if you've got 5 or 10, 15 points, it's not a problem. But what do you do when you've got an extrovert that's out here about 40 or 50? Now, when I take the full, not that you care about this, but when I take the full-blown thing, you can score 55 on the extrovert, and I score 55 on the extrovert. I don't have any introvert points. Zero. But I don't have any mid-range scores anyway. All my scores are very strong. And lots of folks are that way. Some people have more mid-range scores, and I'm wording it positively. There's no such thing as a bad score on the Myers-Briggs. There's a mid-range and there's a strong. Okay? But if you have one partner in some kind of a relationship who scores, let's say, 32 introvert, and somebody else scores 32 extrovert, guess what, folks? You're 64 points apart. You can go crazy. Because, and it's not fair to say this, but stereotypically in counseling, we run into over and over and over, in fact, Myers and Briggs both said this over and over. What happens is, and it's oversimplified anytime you're trying to look at a type, but you get stereotypically the male who is introverted and just really powerful and quiet, but boy, when he speaks, it's really pretty significant. And you get the extrovert who's out there and social and can talk and really loves to share feelings and everything, and he thinks that's so wonderful because, well, okay, now they're married 10 years. She's saying, this guy's a lump. He never says anything, and he hasn't a clue about sharing his feelings. And the guy's saying, she's an airhead. I mean, so what attracted you initially, at least Myers and Briggs, would say, you got to recapture that. What was it that was so wonderful at the other end of the continuum? That's what marriage counseling is all about sometimes, figuring about, you used to really think that was wonderful. Where did that go? Part of it is tolerance, recognizing that there is a difference between extroverts and introverts, a huge difference. It's not bad, it's not good, but when I sit in a meeting because I'm so extroverted, I have to be sensitive to the fact that there are people that learn better if nobody says anything. So one of the ways I try to be sensitive to that is I take copious notes. I mean, because that's an extroverted process. I take copious notes. But I can only stand a meeting about 20 minutes long, and then I've got to say, now, let me see, that point that you just covered, let me see, were you saying, I've got to ground it because I'm going crazy? Whereas the introvert is sitting there quietly, learning, processing, pulling it all together, thinking, why doesn't he shut up? Do you know? And learning some tolerance for that is that I've got to learn to do two things as an extrovert. Pay attention to that my extroverted process can drive other people nuts. And also tone it down a bit, but not completely sell myself out. Now the introvert, it comes out wonderfully well if what they'll do is think, you know, in all of my relationships, sometimes it does help other people if I let them know how I came to that conclusion. It doesn't dawn on an introvert. See, introverts, if you looked at life like a math problem, a classic introvert would go from here to this solution and give you the solution and never tell you how they got there. Why tell you how I got there? Got there and it's right. What do you need to know that for? What do you need to know what I think about it or how I feel about it? What's that got to do with anything? An introvert is saying, but I want to know the steps you went through. Can't you talk with me more about it? And so, you know, both can pay some attention to that and make some shifts. That makes some sense? When the number's pretty big, you get to pay attention to that a lot. And when you pay attention and honor the person in the other position, you're a lot better off. Sensate intuitive. Maybe not, obviously. We couldn't have two eyes, so we got to have the N for intuitive. Intuitive folks sort of get there by hunches. Sensate folks want to know what's in the checkbook. The data, the detail. It's not right, it's not wrong. Thank goodness I work with people who are sensates, because I'm way out here. But I also have to figure out how to balance my checkbook and some of those kind of things, and so I want to be around people. Can you imagine having an intuitive pharmacist? No! I want that guy to have those details very well done. I don't want to get a sort of prescription. I'd like it to be exact. But that wouldn't be that important to me. But I'm not a pharmacist either. Sensates, I wanted to say another piece, that this is a difference in the Myers-Briggs, and that is that when you do a task, like standing up right now, I'm in front of this group and I'm talking to you about some things, and that's fine, and most of you are listening, and that's fine. And it's pretty easy for me, and it's pretty energizing for me, because I got eye contact, and I'm reading you as a group, and that's energizing for me, and I'm an extrovert, and it's fun to be here. And, you know, if I were an introvert, a classic introvert, I could do the job just as well. It has nothing to do with how well you perform, the extrovert or the introvert. One thing, as an introvert, it would tax me more. It would discharge my battery more. To be up in front of a group of people for the better part of an hour doing this little dog and pony show, and I will walk away from it less taxed, less drained than an introvert will. But it will have nothing to do with how well we do the job. Does that make some sense to you?
Yeah.
When the job is, or when the job, for see, a lot of people don't understand this, and there are some personality characteristics that we've learned different. Like, for instance, don't tell me why, but the computer says this. The people with the best sense of humor are the introverts. Introverts are funnier than Dickens. And they really have a good sense of humor. You may never know it because you may never listen. Particularly if you're like me and you're blithering all the time, you don't hear how good their sense of humor is. But the introvert can go to a party, and when the party is the task, the introvert can party as good as the extrovert because that's the job. And that job is probably a bad word. That's the task. That's what we're here to do. We're going to do some air guitar, and we're going to have fun. So that makes some sense. But it does drain an introvert more to be on, to be in front of people, to be reading cues, to be riding with the audience. Like, say, I'm watching you, and I'm watching for which heads are going up and down and things. Is this going okay? How's it working? And that's energizing to me. But to someone who is introverted, it's a little tougher. Sensates are most comfortable when they have lots of data to make decisions. Lots of data to make decisions. The word I used was most comfortable. Intuitives, wish I could remember his name, because I heard this story here at Holden. Larry, somebody who taught at Cal Lutheran, I started coming up here in 1972, you know, that's a long time ago. And Larry used to come up here, and he was a geologist, and used to teach us all about the mine, and he taught me about, taught all of us about water witchers, and I loved that story. Do you know what a water witcher is? Well, what Larry said, Larry was a hydrologist and did all this kind of stuff, and his explanation, which made tons of sense to me, is that good water witchers are folks that are great intuitives. Great intuitives. And what they do is they've got all the sensate data, but they didn't necessarily go to college and learn about water tables and everything, but they've got all that working for them, and they walk along and get themselves in probably a mild hypnotic state with that stick, and when all the intuitive data comes together, guess what happens? Wham! That stick jumps down, and lots of times there's water there. But that's a highly polished intuitive process. You can also go to a guy like Larry, who's been to college, knows all about water tables, pays attention, does all the kind of things, uses all the sensate data, and lots of times will find water. And he said to me, I don't know that much about finding water. He said, I'm not sure which one finds the best amount of water. Probably how skillful you are. But this one wants lots of data. This one is a hunch person, your guts. Are you with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing moving down to thinkers and feelers.
You say why they choose that word sensei? Sounds like it's touchy-feely.
It doesn't mean that, but it does mean paying attention to all the senses, like Sensates don't just want to know what's in the checkbook. Sensates are also paying attention to how warm it is the wind blowing, how many colors are in the room. They pay attention to all the senses, and it came from the sense, smell, touch, feel.
Although your description made it sound more like we're data processors, so instead of...
I'm glad you asked the question, because I didn't really mean to keep it that much. It's that, too, but it's paying attention to all the senses. I, because I'm a strong intuitive, can tell you... if I like the way someone was dressed, but I probably can't tell you what they wore. A sensate can probably tell you what their hair was like, what color it was, how long their dress was, how tight, you know, that's... So in that sense, it's like a data processing kind of thing. But I can tell you, oh, that person looked absolutely wonderful. But what'd they have on? I don't know. But they sure look good. So, I want to jump to thinkers and feelers. Thinkers analyze data. They critically analyze data. And that's a lot of how they make decisions, by analyzing data. Whereas feelers go with what lines up right inside of them. And it's not so much feeling emotional, as you said, touchy-feely. It's that, but it's also being in line with your integrity. Being in line with, I was talking to Paul Olson last night, we were chatting about that, and he and I both did a wonderful thing or a dumb thing, but back in the 60s we got in some freedom marches down in the South because we believed those were things to do. Didn't make good sense. One of my sons said, Dad, you left college, you did all this stuff. That was crazy. Well, it didn't make good sense in terms of analyzing data, but it made a lot of sense in terms of feeling what matched inside of what I felt right, felt about it. In terms of the decision-making process, it's how do you come to truth for you in which you make a decision? And thinkers analyze the data and come to the truth. Feelers take a look at how they feel about it and make the decision of what they ought to do. And then we'll kick it down to judges and perceivers. Perceivers are spontaneous, big picture people who, the best description I can think of a pea person is a person who is very, very comfortable going with the flow. You know, whatever happens, that's okay. That's all right. Start out to do one thing in the evening and that seemed to kind of bum out. All right, okay, let's go over here. So we can't get Mexican. We'll go for Chinese. Who cares? It'll be fun. Judgers go crazy with that. Judgers go crazy. Judgers are folks who like to have things lined up in an orderly, sequential kind of manner. And I'll use the same statement that I made. When you have a perceiver who's very comfortable with the big picture and it doesn't matter and they talk in a circular manner and whatever works out is okay. And it's not better or worse, but you put that person in a situation where they're in a class where you're taking a foreign language and you have to memorize a lot of things and oh, they have a very difficult time because it's not their normal way to do it. Now, you're right-handed or you're left-handed? Probably. And some of you may be ambidextrous, but you're probably one way or the other. If you're right-hand dominant, if you have enough reason to do it, you can learn to be left-hand functional. It's all right. And if you're an extrovert, you can learn to do it this way. It takes a little work. Or you can get 55, and Jung says it's supposed to all come together by the time you're 55, and thank goodness I'm starting to get there. I mean, I'm past 55, but some of it's starting to come together, thank goodness. Theoretically, as you evolve as a person, and you get up into what he calls, or Jung said, in the 50, 55, 60 year range, you, as an evolved human being, should be able to work with all, both ends of that kind of thing, pretty well. But judges are most comfortable. Now, if you put a judger in this situation that's loosey-goosey, you don't know what the answers are supposed to be, and I'm seeing heads go crazy, you know, you're in a literature class, and you're going in and you got your notepad and the teacher says, let's don't even do this today. Let's go out and look at the leaves. What do you mean? I got to get a grade in this class. I mean, what am I supposed to write about? Come on! And that, so that's difficult for, and you have to stretch yourself to do it the other way. Not good, not bad. We use the Myers-Briggs a lot for learning styles in teaching because teachers hopefully are sensitive to the fact that they got judgers, they got thinkers in their class. And it's not good or it's not bad, but if you teach to a learning style that's so foreign and you don't pay attention to the fact that you've got ISTJs in there, and every time you walk in it'd be just loosey-goosey and never have any particular game plan or lesson plan, but somehow they've got to get a grade out of the class, and you're not sensitive to that, that's going to be a very stressful class for that person. They're going to be running the other way as fast as they can. Pastor at the church where I go has done a lot with the Myers-Briggs, and he has lots of fun with it. He will preach to this group one Sunday, and he will preach to this group on a different Sunday. And he said, it's so fun. It's a big church, and a lot of people write in and tell him how he did. And the introverts will be writing one Sunday, it was fantastic this week. Wish you'd do this every week. And then the other group will be writing to him a different week because he's trying to reach a different audience. And sometimes, rather than try to go to everybody, he'll really go with one group or the other. And he will. Sometimes he'll come in and say, you know, I didn't get around to doing a sermon this week, so why don't we just have an interactive kind of thing? But what do you think? What's important today? Well, of course, the extroverts, thank God, this guy's getting it. We can all share and talk. And the other people are saying, hey, what are we paying you for? That's not what I come to church for. But the extroverts are then writing in the church bulletin and everything, was great this Sunday. Keep it up, keep it up. And the other people are saying, talking to the people on it, can we get rid of this guy? Yes.
One thing that was real helpful to me the first time I took my degree was that thinkers do feel and feelers do feel.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to say that you don't. In fact, I don't want to throw too many curveballs at you. What time is it?
4:28.
So we're good for a little bit more. Here's a, it's like you get a hold of this and you're looking at your own answers and you say, ah, it makes some sense. I could see, yeah, I see some nods. Now, not only do thinkers feel and feelers think, and we all have the full range of this, but if you get into crisis, you flip down to the other end. Whoops. If you do, you really do. Introverts get into crisis. A child dies. You lose a job suddenly. You know what I mean? Some real crisis going on in your life. And introverts will try to talk their way through that problem. Guess what? Introverts aren't very good at doing that. What they're good at doing is being by themselves and figuring it out, gathering all the data, particularly if they're an introvert, a sensei, thinker, judger, they're most comfortable doing that. And they'll flip down to the other end and get kind of goofy. And vice versa. And it really does go that way. So you not only do sometimes thinkers feel and feelers think, yeah, let's not try to say that you don't need that. Sometimes in crisis, that's all you can do. And I also want to do that right hand, left hand thing. I have learned because I'm in business. I mean, I run a business and have to try to make sure that 10 or 12 people get a paycheck. It's a small company, but there's a bunch of folks that, you know what? I used to score way out on the P range. And guess what? In the last 15 years, I just keep bumping down this way. I'm a 35J now.
You are?
I sure am. Absolutely. I even knew what I was going to do when I came in here today. You know, had it organized. That's all J stuff. P's would come in here and say, well, guys, we got the Myers-Briggs. What do you want to talk about? Or could, you know, and let's just let it grow and let it flow and see what comes out of it. So, whether I was a closet J or whether I've learned J so much But I score way out on the J score now in 15, 20. I've been taking this test for 15, 20 years. I still go way extrovert, way intuitive, way feeler, but my old score's going to bomb, 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 bomb. I'm way down on the J side because I operate as a J. Yes?
Are these, the way they're laid out, are these characteristics supposed to be correlated? You know, introvert, sensei, thinker, judge. Or is it just as likely to be going back to...
Just as likely. I will say this, and I know I keep saying things like just as likely, and then I tell you some of the stuff that the computers have told us. About 65% of the people in the United States run on the extrovert side. So the introverts are smaller in number. Whoops.
I just said that explains a lot. I'm Canadian.
And Americans talk all the time, don't they? So there are some numbers. There are, and if you're in a group of 15 people and 10 of them are extroverts, it's easy enough for the introvert to feel somehow less than, or this isn't as good a way to be, or something. I don't believe that any more than I believe it's better to be right-handed than it is to be left-handed. Except in our society, we do certain things to make things work easier for right-handed people. And I think in some ways, we reinforce extroverted people somewhat more. I don't think it's any better. You had a question back here.
Yeah, do you find that married people, as time goes on, slowly end up closer together in terms of personality thing? Or does it make any difference?
You know, that's a great question, but I don't think I think that. I think sometimes they get farther apart.
The reason I say it is because I did this thing about 5-6 years ago,
uh-huh.
and before I met my partner,
uh-huh.
and now my score is a lot more closer to what she is than it was when I first took it.
Well, not knowing you at all, let me take a wild guess and say that what happened is that you got more free, more secure to be who you really were, and in this relationship, what's happening is that you're freer to score the way you more naturally would. That'd be my first guess, rather than modeling after her. Of course, I don't know if she's tough enough to make you model after her. I'm just teasing. But that'd be my guess, that you're freed up because, that's all I'm going to say about it. Yeah?
Would you say that again, that during crisis...
You flip to the other end.
On just a couple?
No, on all of them.
And then you... stay there?
No.
Or you?
No, you go back.
Begin to.
You go back.
You're going back.
You do go back. But some people, it's just a little tool that can kind of help you. Some people can't figure out why, when they're in crisis, the crisis makes things not work well. And it's like they can't even think as clear as they normally do anyway, besides the fact that the crisis is there. And I'm proposing to you that what you're doing is jumping down to other skills that you don't do very well. And being aware of that sometimes can help you. Now, wait a minute. My best way to get through this thing, if I'm an introvert, let's say I'm an ISTJ, my best way to get through this thing is to sit down and write down pros and cons and pay attention, gather all my data, make my decision. That's the best way I work. Rather than running off, seeing a counselor, talk, 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 which isn't bad. I'm not saying that, but that's not your best way of functioning. And I will take an introvert in crisis, if I'm doing some counseling with them in a crisis kind of thing, and try to reorient them back to the way that they do things the best. Because they do it better the other way.
Do we still have time to break into our groups?
Yes, let's do it. Thank you. What I want to do is, let's see if we can figure... Well, first let's take, if you're willing to do that, put the introverts and the extroverts in two different sides. Would you be willing to do that if you scored an I and an E?
Yes, send them over.
How about that? Introverts go over here and the extroverts go over here. Extroverts at this end and introverts at this end. Sure. Why don't you let's finish and then break and then I'll hand it to you. Yes?
So the way that you're going to get well is to go back to the
Okay, so we got introverts over here, and we got extroverts over here. That's interesting, we got more introverts. Look at that, yay! Whatever that means. Extroverts, right over here. Nobody gets a chance to talk, but... All right, now, would you... We can't make all these groups, but how about if we have the extroverted intuitives? Are there any of you? How about going over in this corner? The extroverted intuitives go over in this corner. I won't be able to get it down totally, but we'll get some main ones. Now you guys can start relating because you'll have a good time with each other anyway. How about the introverted sensates? Got any of those ISs? How about you coming for this corner? It's okay to say something now. It really is. Okay. Now, how about the extroverted intuitive feelers? Well, we're sort of there. I want to see what groups to make. I've got to get you guys in a group here somewhere. Go ahead. You're in this corner. There's your chair. Okay. Now, help me out. What? This group is mostly IS, and then how does it break beyond that?
We're IS.
You are?
INs.
Oh, introverted intuitives. Okay. Feelers? Let's go INF back in that corner. INS back in that corner. And it's INTs. What's that? INTs are right here. Okay. Some of the questions on the test, for instance, are more loaded than others. And I just want to tell you this just and then go back to discussing that, for instance. At a law school in Philadelphia, they, for 5 years, gave this test. And now, granted, it was the full test, a little longer than this. One of the word pairs on there is mercy and justice. I can't remember. Is that on this one?
Yes.
Okay. It was interesting because, not counting the whole rest of the test, okay, just mercy and justice, because that's a loaded one for people in law school. 93% of the people that marked mercy as their response didn't finish law school. Isn't that interesting? Over a five-year period of time. So it's a word pair, and you can't build your whole life on one choice. But that was over a five-year period of time that when you have a construct of mercy versus justice, and they're both good things, but mercy folks have a hard time getting through law school, or at least they did in that Philadelphia law school. Justice folks got through real well.